Greetings, Portland Trailblazers fans, and welcome to this edition of the Blazers Edge podcast. I'm Dave Deckard, one of your hosts, the managing editor at BlazersEdge.com. With me, as always, is feature writer and podcast guru, Dan Marang. Dan, it's a long off season, but it's coming to a close. How are you doing at the beginning of September? What have you been up to? It's been a while since we talked.
Yeah, it's been almost a month now with everything going on, and I think that's the first time anybody's, you know, kind of labeled me as a guru of anything. It's usually lesser than fine terms that follow.
Only the best here for you, man.
I thought the beginning of August was dog days, and you and I have kind of talked offline about this, about how difficult it is to maintain storylines and things to talk about in the off season. And I'm actually, like, on a somewhat regular basis, I'm Googling how many days until October 25th. It's like, for the love of God, it's got significance not only on the NBA side, but it's also my mother's birthday. Mine's a week before that. So it's not just one singular thing, but 48 days. So a month and a half is what we're looking at until, you know, official basketball gets underway. We've got training camp, we've got preseason, there's plenty to talk about there, but 48 days until we're playing real basketball.
AKA the most overrated part of the year. But it's funny because that preseason and media day is the funniest thing, because it's like an oasis after crawling through the desert and everything gets magnified and everybody's going, give me something to drink. And
you're craving for Fan Fest.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, man. Fan Fest. Oh, brother. So, well, anyway, I think that's how all of us are. Although I've been enjoying reading Blazers Edge this year. You've noticed we have a considerable staff. And, you know, in years past, as you said, we were always coming up with things to talk about, trying to struggle with it. This year, we're actually struggling with having too much material to fit in to a given week, which is a good problem to have. So hat tip to all of those people who are writing at Blazers Edge and commenting at Blazers Edge. Certainly, probably the best source for Blazers talk and news in the off season. We think so during the season as well. But there's no doubt here that the authors have been doing a wonderful job.
Yeah, no kidding. I mean, we've so many people. We've got people that were on vacations and breaks that have come back. We've got people all over the world, as we had with Adrian stepping in and hosting the podcast while you were gone. So that's always nice to see when we have so many people that can contribute, as opposed to the dynamic duo of just Dave and Ben back in the day.
Yeah, and what news was there? I mean, in the lack of news, you lose half of that equation. So it's like, I can still remember, we were talking about this a little bit, I can still remember the first few years at Blazers Edge where it was just me. And the season would end in April, and there would be nothing substantial until mid-October. And that was a lot of months to fill with material. Boy, we got it pretty fine down there, granular columns, making sure that I didn't address more than one topic in any given column, because if I put two topics in one column, there is going to be a day unfilled at the end of the summer.
Yeah, it's crazy to think about. This is before the onset, really, in the birth of Twitter, where we get so much information. In social media in general, we get stuff from, you know, CJ ripping Kyrie Irving on his Instagram. That becomes a story. I mean, just you're looking for anything and everything that you can to talk about, to kind of sate the appetite of the off season. I mean, that's really what it comes down to.
It's like Real Housewives of the NBA nowadays. Like, when you can't get actual news, it becomes an extended reality show with half-veiled subtweeting and all kinds of stuff. But, well, let's turn our attention toward the season just a little bit. There is a burgeoning excitement that is going to happen soon. It's not quite here yet, but you can begin to feel its stirrings. About the 30 or 20 day mark, it will hit. Probably September 25th will be a big day. And then, of course, the opening of training camp. All kinds of excitement is going to bubble forth. So in anticipation of that, let me ask you this. What are you most excited to see, or who are you most excited to see this season on the Trailblazers roster? You got 15 guys plus some hangers on. You got possibilities all over the board. Who really gets you going viscerally that I got to see him play?
You know, down at Summer League, I got to see some of the younger guys. I got to see a little bit of Von Leh. I got to see some Napier. I've seen him with some other teams. But honestly, and this kind of goes back to what I've talked about in the past and being somewhat of a fanboy, is Myers. What's he going to do when he comes back? Last year coming into the season, he was not, I don't want to say gifted a spot in the starting lineup, but based on his effort from the playoffs and how they kind of packaged him up as part of a potential big three, he was given some leniency and some leeway, and then the injuries and some subpar play just kind of derailed everything. Now, I don't think he's going to be ready opening night, but that even magnifies it even more to me. Is what's he going to do when he comes back? Is he going to establish himself? He's got his contract now, which may have been a hindrance coming into last season. Does that free him up to be what he needs to be what he wants to be what the team needs him to be? That's the guy. I know what I'm getting from Damian. I know what I'm getting from CJ. Any kind of growth those guys give me, that's great. Meeting with the power forward, we've kind of seen with that. I think we've seen from the big key contributors what they're going to be. Evan Turner, he's not a young guy. I don't expect him or his game to radically change. Myers has still got that huge potential tag on him, and he has yet to seize it fully. And if he can, that's to me, that's what I'm homed in on. That's the one thing that I want to see happen, not only for him and myself, but the team as a whole, because of what he can do can transform this team and what it can be going forward.
Yeah, you know, Leonard, I think, is one of the biggest wild cards. The most, I think you can easily say he's the most significant wild card on the roster. My heart isn't beating to see him play. For me, if it's who I'm most curious about, I suppose that would be Evan Turner. But if it's who I'm most excited to see on the floor, I got to go with McCollum. And I know he's not going to have a breakout season like he did last year, but we've only seen one season of real CJ, and I'm excited to see year two and to see what's going to happen. Not exponential growth, but little tweaks in his game, rhythm and timing and his place in the offense. I actually think that he's going to have multiple games this year where he busts out for, you know, 30, where he basically goes Damian Lillard. And I think that probably there's a chance that, you know, last year it was unequal a little bit in the backcourt. I think there's a chance that this is the year that these two become truly inseparable, that you cannot mention Damian Lillard without CJ McCollum and vice versa. And they're really viewed on somewhat of an equal playing field around the league, maybe even in terms of celebrity status, but certainly in terms of their scoring prowess and their 1-2 punch.
What's crazy is CJ had his largest scoring output of the season last year on opening night with 37 points against the Pelicans. And that kind of, you know, set him off for a very productive and really great season. But we didn't see that scoring punch, that absolute explosion again for the rest of the year, where he just went absolutely bananas. He had great nights, don't get me wrong. But you're right, I think he was a most assuredly a, to use Blazers Edge parlance, a second banana.
We invented that. I think that was like Ed McMahon with Johnny Carson.
Well, I just mean with the way things went. But I think you're right. You know, going into this year, he's much more solidified. But defenses are going to game plan differently too. So, but as far as excitement, yeah, I think if you had to pin me down and ask me which of the two guys, Damian or CJ, has the most room to continue growing, Dame's got 4 years under his belt. I think he is what he is at this point. He'll continue adding. CJ, while he's been in the league almost as long, has only gotten one full year of experience. Now, I don't expect a Wes Matthews-type learning curve, and by that I mean adding something wholly new to your game that's almost transformational. I mean, Wes came back with, you know, his first couple years in the league. First, it was a three-pointer. Then it was an unbelievable step-back jumper. Then it was a dynamic post game. Then it was a dribble drive. CJ has a lot more of those tools to begin with, so I don't think you'll see these, like you said, the little micro tweaks and changes. I don't think you'll see these huge growth spurts in particular areas. But probably I think that's going to be fascinating.
The best way to put it is going to be to say the ingredients have been there and they're good ingredients.
Yeah.
Now the recipe gets refined in CJ's game internally and in his fit in the starting lineup. And even with the bench, I mean, I'm still I assume that's still going to be the plan, that McCollum is going to be the bridge between that starting lineup and the bench that keeps the scoring going, that keeps the offensive threat on the floor and keeps the ball moving. And I expect that he now will be ready for that even more. And I think he's going to become the rarest of rare designations, a utility player who is also a star. And we haven't seen that since, I don't know.
Manu?
Yeah, I mean, that's a big one. You know, Scottie Pippen back in the day was the archetype of that, but he was a superstar and also played great defense. So yeah. Not fair to compare CJ there. But I mean, that's the lofty height and the difference that a player like that can make. Don't expect CJ to do that. But it's pretty nifty to have a Swiss Army knife that's also really darn sharp and can actually do things. It's like he's a Swiss Army knife with full-size implements, electric can opener and all that, mixer and all that stuff. So it'll be good to see that on the floor. Now, let's also talk about one more category. Last year, when Phil Nasons was with us, we talked about breakout seasons, and I forget who Phil picked. I said it was obviously going to be CJ McCollum, and it was. That's no credit to me. It was obviously going to be CJ McCollum. The question's a little more difficult this year. Let's tackle it. Which Trailblazer is going to have a breakout season this year and show way more than he has before?
That was a tough one. It's easy to peg Myers for that because he's still got the potential. But I think there's a couple guys on the roster that could fit. You could see Maurice Harkless, but again, we saw some of it late towards the season. So I don't think anything will be a huge surprise. The guy that seems like he's probably the most prime for it, as odd as this may sound, is probably Al-Farouq Aminu. He's going to know his role, know his position. If they're going to play him at the four almost exclusively, then I think he becomes more valuable at that position to the team and how he fits together. I don't think they're going to rely on him quite as much to shoot as they did before, but because of the mismatches that he'll probably see on a nightly basis on the offensive end, I think we can expect a more efficient Al-Farouq. And I think that, to me, would be huge. I mean, if he becomes a more efficient threat, then, yeah, he absolutely can be a breakout player.
I'm not sure how his efficiency is going to go up unless he just offensive rebounds and fast breaks. I mean, that's his bailiwick. He's not a good ball handler. He's not a good shooter. He's developed. I'm not saying that he hasn't developed some of that stuff. It's just not his natural inclination. So, you know, I think he can get more efficient, but I fear that efficiency is cutting down on the misses more than increasing the makes, but we'll see. Do you think Mo Harkless is going to get buried? Is there any chance Mo Harkless just disappears on this roster?
Before the contract, I would have said yes. But once they gave him that deal, how do you bury that?
Well, I mean, they've got 13 people they can't bury.
Yeah.
I mean,
Vonleh's getting buried. Vonleh's getting buried. That part of the deal is, I think, done for quite a long time. Unless injuries pop up or he does something in practice that just blows the coaches away. So that frees up some minutes right away. If you're looking at how the last season started going into this season. That'll probably be filled by Aminu and
Myers Leonard, Ed Davis. Mm-hmm. I mean that's three people right there who are all better than Vonleh was last year. And then small forward, I mean, you got Turner Crabb hanging out there. I guess you could put Harkless in there. You could even technically start Harkless there. But how do you find minutes for everybody and who's the odd man out?
And I think that's part of the question when you ask who's going to have the breakout season is who's going to have the opportunity. Because CJ and Damian are who they are. I think beyond those two, the third most likely solidified player is Al-Farouq. After that, you could probably go with Plumlee, with Azeeley already showing signs of wear and tear, and his status kind of up in the air.
After going to one Portland Timbers game.
Yeah. Well,
so that's the big contribution there. Well,
yeah. So, maybe. I mean, I don't think it's a stretch to say that Plumlee probably starts the way the season goes. Like I said, I don't think Leonard's going to be ready for opening night. So that's two guys out of the rotation right there. Three, if you want to throw Vonleh in there. So that makes things easier for Coach Stotts going into the season. But you're right. You still got to throw Crabb in there. You've added Turner. So you've got a bevy of these guys between the 2, 3, and 4 position. Your only real healthy 5 is Plumlee. You could throw Davis in there if you wanted to play him at the 5. But again, we're talking about what players are going to get opportunities to really break out. Now, if a player shows that they're going to get it, you know, the way Harkless played going down the stretch, I think they got to give him a chance. And if he does take it and run with it, then you go with him. Because, I mean, he's the guy, right? He's got youth. He's got potential. He still showed that he still got a lot of room to grow. But do you want to go and play the growth experiment like we did for 60-plus games and let Harkless get the run? Or do you go with the established player and let Turner get the run?
Yeah, they can't experiment much anymore. I mean, it's a different year. I think the Blazers last year were still in the mode a little bit of being taken by surprise. Now, I think they'd bristle at that. They'll say they expected to win. And, of course, that's true. You always expect to go. You don't play to lose. At the same time, you know, there was a little bit of, well, youth movement, and we're still in the experimental stage. You spend all this money. You've brought on these players. Granted, they're not necessarily established players. They're not going to bowl the league over with their offseason acquisitions. But still, you signed them. That signifies something. That signifies you're going for something. So I think that probably the leash will be a little bit shorter this year. Not that Stotts is ever going to be a draconian coach, but I bet you'll see lineup experiments and lineup shifting with all these players, but it's not going to be to test the waters. It's going to be because somebody's playing well or because somebody's playing poorly.
Who's the guy that you're picking for the breakout?
You know, it's hard because it's a big mush in there. But I don't know. I still think Alan Crabb has as much ceiling as anybody. And again, as you say, the opportunity is in question. But I really think that there's potential for a 1-2-3 guard lineup that is hard to compare. I mean, that's if they don't take the league by storm, at least they'll cause a little overcast, cloudy rain on a few people's courts. Because I think Crabb eventually could have the potential to get near 20 points himself under the right circumstances and if he was fed the right shots. And I think that if the offense is allowed to go toward him, if the guards are amenable, if Coach Stotts is green lighting him and pointing in his direction, I think that could still happen. So I'm going to say Crabb, but think of that the same way you thought of the Republican presidential nominee field back at the beginning. There are 18 people who could actually qualify, and he's got a plurality of likelihood, not a majority.
Yeah, you know, honestly, this goes back to something that I wrote, a month and a half ago. Who's the Blazers' legitimate third option? And I think a lot of that kind of ties into how you define who's going to be the breakout player, and that breakout player is probably going to be the Blazers' third option. And Crabb's a really interesting one. If you've been following him or anybody that he's associated with on Twitter, you've seen some of his workout videos, and it appears that the thing that he's working on is putting the ball on the floor. Offensively, that's what the next step for Alan Crabb.
Well, he needs to.
He's a phenomenal spot-up shooter, one of the best in the NBA, from literally everywhere on the floor.
And that's the key right there, outside, inside. I mean, he's not going to get to the rim, but he and CJ both have that pull-up mid-range jumper that's not common in the league anymore. It's not necessarily as much respected in the league anymore, but it can be effective in the league because the defenses will give it to you.
Yeah, those two guys are two of the best mid-range and spot-up shooters in the entire NBA. I've gone through the stats. I've gone through the metrics. They blow away the field for the most part. The only other guys that are even in the same class are guys like Kevin Durant and Dirk Nowitzki. So, mm-hmm. I mean, when you're talking about those guys, sure, first ballot Hall of Famers, you're doing something right. And it's kind of funny. You bring up Crabbe at the rim. Crabbe, while he doesn't get there very often, his finishing percentage is phenomenal. He's above 70% at the rim. Now, granted, a lot of those opportunities are in transition. And that, to me, if you're talking about a breakout player, I think a lot of it hinges on Coach Stotts for two things. One, the rotations and the opportunity. Two, how he figures his defense. And by that, I mean, if he's going to take this defense and be passive like they were the early part of the season, or if they're going to be a little bit more aggressive like they were down the stretch when they started really getting things going. If they're going to really get things going and push defensive tempo, then yeah, I would switch to Crabbe. I would switch to Crabbe in a heartbeat because he was phenomenal in transition. He generated turnovers. He got on the fast break. Lillard and McCollum were 1 and 2 in fast break points for the Blazers and transition points. Crabbe was right behind him. If you're talking about points per minute based on transition points, Crabbe was number one on the team. So if you're talking about those kind of opportunities, then yeah, I would go from Aminu to Crabbe. But again, a lot of it hinges on opportunity and how they figure things on defensive end.
Well, Coach Stotts is already talking about defense early on, and of course that favors Aminu. They play different positions now, but Crabbe may be shuffled up to that small forward running a three-guard set, you know. And Aminu, the experiment is still happening at power forward, so he may eventually retreat back down or simply play both positions. So I doubt they'll come into conflict much, but there's certainly a dramatic difference between them defensively. But I also think that the stat you brought up as far as Crabbe being good finishing at the rim, probably a little deceiving. I think you kind of shaded toward it there. If Crabbe is at the rim and shooting, it's an easy shot.
Oh,
because
yeah.
He hasn't got the dribble to get there, and that's he does well at the rim by only getting easy shots there. So we'll see. He has to, I think, develop some of that simply because there is such a void outside of the two starting guards. Nobody else can do that. I mean, you don't want Aminu dribbling the ball. Harkless, none of the power forwards are going to do it. God forbid the center should do it. I mean, Plumlee's good.
Plumlee, I'm actually okay with.
Yeah, but he's not. Plumlee, you don't want Plumlee making ISO moves off the dribble, though.
No, God, no.
I mean, that's not going to happen. So literally there's no one else who can touch that ball except to shoot or pass it, except for Lillard and McCollum. And boy, if Crabbe can develop a little bit of game. Well, and of course, we should not forget Evan Turner. This is his thing. This is part of why he was brought on board. And that'll be interesting, too, to see if Turner bumps out Crabbe.
And again, this kind of goes back to the same thing, is that opportunity. And that's why I'm more inclined to go with Aminu, because he's a more established. I don't want to say he's more established or entrenched in his position, but I mean, it's what it feels like.
And, well, there's always the possibility of trades, too. I mean, further trades. We talked about that earlier in the season. But if that happens, Alan Crabbe's name may be among those players. He was one of the few guys that seemed to garner legitimate interest among the Blazer incumbents this summer. So perhaps there's a combo deal out there with him in it that might entice somebody. So one of the guys you just mentioned, Mason Plumlee. We've been thinking about this Blazers roster all summer, talking about trades and signings and all that. The common thread throughout the whole thing is that people have been champing at the bit to kind of get Plumlee on the down escalator. Either, if not trade him, either get him on the bench or get him fewer minutes. Some of that is natural in the summer that began talking about Hassan Whiteside, who the Blazers apparently wanted. And when you don't get him, Mason Plumlee doesn't look quite as good as he did before. But, you know, Festus Ezeli caused a big stir. And his track record isn't, you know, absolutely phenomenal. So, but people were willing to jettison or demote Plumlee for Ezeli. Give us your feelings about Mason. Is he underrated right now? Should he be promoted again in the minds of Blazers fans?
Well, so quick history here. My first ever feature for Blazers Edge was Mason Plumlee. He struggles with a lot of different things. And I had a lot of people push back on it. And as the season, this is earlier in the season, and as the season went on, a lot of people kind of warmed to the idea of, yeah, you know, we probably should look at an upgrade here. What's interesting is the more I look at it at this point, Mason Plumlee is not a bad fit. I've often said that he would be the best backup big man in the NBA because of what he can do. Now, we saw some of his weaknesses exposed in the Golden State series. You can't give Mason Plumlee arms that are 5 inches longer. If you could, he'd be phenomenal. But let's take a look at it in the whole. If you want to take a guy like Evan Turner and talk about his defensive impact in Boston last year, he had a guy that he played alongside in Isaiah Thomas who, while generates steals, gets taken advantage of defensively because of his size. Now, Kelly Olynyk and Tyler Zeller are not defensive stalwarts. You don't worry about them so much because of their size, but if you compare their stats with, albeit probably a better defensive perimeter from Turner and Evan Bradley and a guy who gambles on steals like Isaiah Thomas, both Olynyk and Zeller gave up a higher field goal percentage inside 6 feet than Mason Plumlee did. And if you look at the team last year for the Blazers actually had the best defensive field goal percentage in the NBA at 57.7% inside 6 feet. So when the Blazers are there and they've got a body on somebody, they weren't terrible. The problem was, it all starts with perimeter defense. And if you're going to put a guy out there like Evan Turner, and you're going to slide a guy inside like Al-Farouq Aminu, who's an excellent weak side shot blocker and a great help defender, isolation, okay, particularly on the perimeter. But I think that helps Mason Plumlee a ton. And I think going into the season, I'd want to see Evan Turner starting to see if that added defensive pressure from Evan Turner and the defensive help and mobility and maneuverability of Al-Farouq Aminu can allow Mason Plumlee to be a better defender. So I think if you want to take the examples as you see in Boston with better perimeter defense and translate that to Portland, it's not an exact science by any means, but I think Mason Plumlee could be a guy that could be above serviceable, could be a solid contributor defensively. If he gets some help on the perimeter. So there's a lot going on there, and there's a lot of noise in the stats, and I'm not saying it's going to be perfect, and I'm not saying it's going to work out absolutely fantastic, but I think Mason Plumlee has a chance to be, I don't want to say a breakout player, but to not be a negative, or not be the visible sign of defensive ineptitude, to kind of wrap that up.
The visible sign of defensive ineptitude.
He gets blamed ton, and I'm part of it. I was probably unnecessarily unfair to him long points during the season. But you've got to have one or the other. You've got to have perimeter defense, or you've got to have stalwart interior defense. And the Blazers are mediocre at best at both last season.
It was very interesting last season to watch because, of course, the contrast is Robin Lopez. That's the natural comparison because that's what they had before. And Lopez was actually fairly good on the interior if you could leave him there. But as soon as you got him in a pick and roll or got him out on the floor, he was not mobile enough to make that big of a difference. So you got all the mobility you could wish for in Plumlee comparatively. But the problem is when he gets there, even though he'll get to the spot, he doesn't make as big of a difference as Lopez did when he got to the spot. So he gets to more spots than Robin did, but does less with it. And the Blazers, as you say, can't settle for either. I mean, this is why they were rumored to be chasing centers. This is exactly it. It wasn't just the offense, although the offense would have been phenomenal. It was. They've got to have some legitimate shot blocking. They've got to have some intimidation factor in there, along with the mobility and along with some size. They can't be picking one slice of the pie and leaving out four others. They need all of them. And they don't have the center on the roster, at least not healthy, who can do that. And that's not Plumlee's fault. Plumlee is, as you say, I think this applies to Al-Farouq Aminu as well, a good fit for this roster right now. That doesn't mean that Plumlee is a superlative player or that he's going to be a good fit forever. He's probably not the kind of guy that you build your center position around, but he'll do enough to help you right now, with the understanding that if you want to play at a championship level, you still have to upgrade that position. And I'm scratching my head seeing where and how the Blazers are going to do that.
Yeah, I mean, I think, again, it goes back to the things we've discussed in the past about a potential trade. But I'm willing to give Plumlee the benefit of the doubt heading into this season. If, as you said, as Coach Stotts is talking and preaching about defense, which I think every NBA team does, but the growth of year one under Coach Stotts with the Lillard, LaMarcus, Matthews, Batum, Lopez team to year two was huge. And you can't, again, make the direct comparison. But I wonder what it would be for this team after a year together and understanding schemes, understanding how the relationships work, the chemistry, the communication, if some of those things, some of the nagging issues don't start to disappear just a little bit. Now, it's not going to be a cure-all or an instant fix, but less of the boneheaded defensive plays and blow-bys and you know, blown assignments, and more of the consistent, albeit steady and not too risk-heavy, Stotts-like defense that kind of buoys them throughout the season.
Well, you know, Stotts is talking early about defense, but I think he's serious about it this time. I think that he knows and the world knows that if the Blazers are going to get better, they have to shore up that end. And that is by far the biggest gray area on this team. It's not youth. It's not chemistry. It's not all those other question marks that we can name. It's not even talent anymore. I mean, they have a reasonable amount of talent, not world beating, but enough. They don't have defense. They don't have good enough, consistent enough defense in order to really make a mark. And you can get by in the regular season without it, and you can do well in the regular season without it, but you're not going to really make a mark in this league if you can't defend.
Yeah, no, come May and June, you have to have it, and that's the bottom line. So, you know, going into this season, to me, that's I think, how Blazers fans need to look at Mason Plumlee. Is he's steady, he's probably not going to be the long-term answer, but I think cutting him a little bit of slack, I mean, you could throw Hassan, let's just go ahead and say this. The arguments that were going down in the comment sections when we were talking about Hassan Whiteside was, is Hassan Whiteside's impact going to be enough to offset Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum's subpar defense? If you're saying that about one of the best shot blockers in the NBA, a guy who's supposed to help your interior defense, how can you paint the defensive woes of this team so heavily on Mason Plumlee?
Yeah, I mean, it's like coming in with a $10,000 debt and you got a $150 check. That check is actually decent. It can get you a lot of things, but you're $9,850 short there, and you need to win the lottery, scratch a ticket somewhere to make this work, and Plumlee isn't enough. This is why Azeeley was the hope, but again, we've talked about this, Azeeley's knees, how much can he play, etc., etc. We'll have to see what happens with that position. As we close out, though, there have been a couple articles this week about NBA players and their off-season, both regimens and off-season trips, habits, enjoyments, and stuff like that. So I wanted to ask you a question or two, Dan, since we're bidding farewell almost to the off-season with this podcast, and we'll start to laser in and crank up again on the next one. Before we leave the off-season, what have you been doing this summer? And what's been the most exciting part for you?
My summer has not been too crazy or out of this world. The biggest things, obviously, I went to Summer League. I met with a lot of NBA executives. For those that don't know, I've been chasing a job and working for an NBA team, and while I've got quite a few hooks and feelers out there, nothing is fully materialized. While I'm still waiting to hear back from a couple teams, so that's pretty much occupied my entire being. So other than that, you know, it's the normal doldrums of summer. I've got a baby niece who takes up a lot of my time, but nothing too crazy or spectacular. As I get older, it's the simple things that I find that kind of hunker me down, just sitting outside with a guitar and, you know, an adult beverage on a nice summer day in Oregon. It's one of the things that keeps me here in Oregon is the summers. So other than that, it's been pretty slow.
Well, I guess that's exciting enough. Guitar playing and beer drinking. I mean, hey, that sounds like a good summer to me.
How about you? I mean, I know you've been plenty busy.
Yeah, I actually have just finished a transition to Boise, Idaho, which will surprise everybody who thought that's where I already lived. I've lived in Idaho for a decade. Believe it or not, the state extends beyond just Boise.
No,
I was
it
up,
doesn't.
Up
it's just
in the
Smurf turf.
Yeah. I was up in the panhandle for the last decade, actually hours and hours away from Boise, but transitioned in my day job and am now working and serving down here in the city itself, and just finished that move. So that is fairly big deal. Moving is no fun at all. There are still 150 boxes in my garage left to be open. So I hope to get that done before the season starts. But that's been plenty of excitement all on its own. But, you know, hey, enough of our boring lives. Let's pretend for a minute that we are NBA players, or at least make NBA player money. If you had that $20 million a year salary that's all the rage nowadays with all the kids in the NBA, what would your ideal summer be? What would you do during the offseason? Besides practice and work out on your already, you know, incredible physique, what would you do?
My fantastic physique.
Absolutely.
You know, honestly, let me caveat this first so we can get this out of the way. For those fans out there that say that if I were an NBA player, I'd be working out 6, 8, 10 hours a day on my game. NBA players do this. This is what they take a couple weeks off. That's literally it. Every NBA player I've ever talked to, when they tell me what they do in the offseason, my jaw hits the floor because of how hard they work and how much time they put in. It's insane. Now, the fun side of it, I'd be living the CJ McCollum life. I'd be making connections, doing anything, writing anywhere, making fun of other players on Instagram, traveling the world, building a brand. That's what I'd be doing. I would love to do what he does. He hosts a radio show in the morning, and then or during the season in the morning, and then he hosts a hip hop radio station on Friday nights. I mean, the guy has his hands in everything. He's doing his passion. He's following everything he wants to do. You know, he wants to be in journalism in some facet when he gets out. I'd be wanting to do the same thing. I'd be wanting my passion. Look at what Damian Lillard does. He's got his hip hop career, if you want to call it that, on the side. That's what he does. That's his passion outside of basketball. And there's a lot of guys in the NBA who I think that they live basketball. But as things have kind of evolved over the last decade or so, you're seeing more and more of these guys live their lives and their passions outside of basketball. And that, to me, that is what would be amazing about having that kind of salary. Chasing whatever dream you wanted to, because you could make it happen monetarily. You would have the connections. You would have everything you could ever want at your disposal. All you got to do is pick up a phone, call your agent, or call somebody, some facilitator, and make it happen. That,
you mean
that
they don't, use Travelocity?
It.
Is that what you're talking
no,
about?
No, man. It's Experia. Come on, man. But, I mean, that to me is living the dream. I was like, oh, I'd buy this car, buy that car. You can do that whenever. In any ways, you don't buy, you lease when you have that kind of money. Come on now. You're crazy. But doing what you want, when you want, the way you want. that to me is the core of having that money and being that young and being able to do it. Now, giving back and doing all the charity work, I think that becomes a huge part of it as you go throughout your career. But part of being in that lifestyle is being able to enjoy that lifestyle. And when I see a guy like McCollum who seems to completely and totally embrace and enjoy life outside of basketball, that to me is awesome.
Yeah, I mean, I think you've hit on something important there. I think everybody thinks about what they'd buy with that money. And the stuff you have doesn't really make you happy. It's how you use it or what you experience as you're using it. And so you can get away with with having a lot less stuff than you think you need or would want. I would imagine after the first couple cars, unless that was really your passion, you'd figure out that, hey, this is a nice car. I'm glad I have it, but why would I want 30 of them? Or why do I need a $1 million car? This one is doing me just fine, you know? So you've hit on it for me, too. It would be the experience of it. I mean, I'd love to go to the coast. I love the Oregon coast. I'd probably spend a week there. Maybe go down to New Mexico. One of the things that you could probably afford is a large, large telescope. And so New Mexico would be fantastic for that. Just go out and get lost somewhere where nobody knew you. It was dark, so nobody's looking at your 7-foot self. You're just out there.
Oh, you're projecting yourself as a center now.
Well, you know, I'm slow, so I have to be a center.
We got to get you out of the country, too. Though. We got you the Oregon coast in New Mexico. No trips to the Mediterranean? Nothing.
Well, yeah. That's next, because after it's like all hot in New Mexico, then you head to somewhere tropical for a different kind of beach.
There you go.
Swimming, having fun, stuff like that. And then, you know, come back home, work out, see some folks. I almost certainly have a recording studio in my house, maybe work on some music and what have
absolutely.
You.
Absolutely.
Because that would be a lot of fun. Just go downstairs and like, oh, I got an idea. I got a good melody. All right, let's record that and add 27 other tracks to it.
I do that here, but on a very, very small and much less expensive scale. The room that I'm in is my little studio, and I've got my, you know, my guitars up against the wall and a little bit of soundproofing in here and my laptop and a few plugs here or there. Something a $20 million paycheck would probably stand to improve upon.
Little bit. When I started out, I had a dual cassette player that you could put a mic in, and it was literally cassettes, but if you played on the left-hand cassette and then recorded on the right, you could dub over it with the mic, right? So you could layer tracks on there. Now, the trick was each time you did it, it would speed up incrementally. So you had maybe 6 tracks before you started sounding like Alvin and the Chipmunks.
Nice.
And so that's about where I started. I still have some old stuff on cassette. I shudder to listen to it because, you know, I always did like vocals pretty early in the process. And so I would be up about maybe a pitch and a half and said sounding chipmunky by the end. So, that's pretty bad.
Honestly, I would love to hear what the other readers and listeners, you know, what you would do, or what's the one experience that you could take advantage of if you had something like that. I mean, to me, I was blessed in my earlier previous career, previous life in the military. I've been to 47 countries. I've been all over the world. There are plenty of places that I would love to go to, buy a villa and just disappear to for a month on end. I mean, that would be, you know, amazing to me. But with such a diverse community, I'm fairly certain we could get some pretty crazy responses.
Yeah, let's do that. We'll throw that out. Let's throw out 2 questions. Who do you think's going to have the breakout season? And if it was you and you got that $20 million contract, what would you be doing in your off season? That's good stuff to chew on until next week. I'm not sure. I think Tara and Joe may actually be here next week in our place. If so, we'll see you a couple weeks from now. If not, we will see you then. For Dan Morang, I am Dave Deckard. Thank you so much for joining us. And how many days left, Dan?
48 days.
48 days as we record, probably 47 as you listen to this. So buckle up. Another season's coming, and we'll be there right with you.